Good morning, everybody. How many of you have 10:15 on your watches? How many of you have 10:13 on your watches? Who has 10:14 on your watches? Okay. How many of you are not wearing a watch? That's right. That's good. How many of you tell time by cell phone? Egad. What are you going to do if your battery dies? All right, everybody. Let's go ahead and get started. Welcome to Overeaters Anonymous' 50th birthday party. Hello. My name is Karen, and I am a compulsive overeater. Oh, would you do that again? That sounded good. Thank you. Just because people have been asking me all day long, the reason I'm wearing a mask is because I have pneumonia, and I'm protecting all of you. I am getting ready to... You're very welcome. I am getting ready to leave soon, so I will not see you all throughout the rest of the weekend, but I hope you all have a fabulous time. Will everyone who wishes to please join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. I will not mind be done. The title of this long-timer panel is Working the Program on a Daily Basis. All of the panel topics this weekend are taken from For Today, the Daily Reader, first published by Overeaters Anonymous in 1982. How many of you have that lovely little white book? And I asked this before, how many of you love that little daily little white book? Yeah, okay. For those of you on the tape, about three-quarters of the room stands up. This panel's topic comes from the May 15th reading. You will see that there are handouts, sort of a lavender purpley color. For those of you on the tape, the reading for May 15th is a Russian proverb that says, pray to God, but continue to row to shore. Here's the quote. God is not my arms and legs. It is up to me to do the footwork. Ours is a program of action. The first two steps require reflection and contemplation. The rest call for direct action. Of course, I do not work a perfect program. When I feel rebellious, as I sometimes do, then I pray to be willing, putting myself and my stubbornness in God's hands. Out of old programming, I still need to be perfect before I can like myself. But God has infinite and unconditional love for me and gives me everything I need, including the willingness to take action. I have but to ask. For today, God does for me what I cannot do for myself, not what I can do. We have six speakers on this panel who have been abstinent and in recovery for over 150 years. I just gave myself goosebumps. Or you all fine folks gave me goosebumps. As they are sharing, we will pass an asket basket around the room. There's actually two. There's a basket and a tin. Please be sure to keep it moving, even if you've already passed it by you. As the speakers continue to share, members may think of questions they didn't have when the basket first passed by. So even though you may see it a few times, just keep it moving. Our first speaker is Chris, who will speak for 12 minutes. 12 minutes, thank you. Yes, I told you all 10, it's 12. I'm sorry, it's 12. We get 12 minutes, guys. I didn't know I was first. Hi! Okay, hi everybody, my name is Chris and I'm a compulsive overeater, a very grateful, abstaining compulsive overeater and vomiter. Wow, what a thrill to be here today, I'm not kidding. It was 30 years ago this right now, or actually a few months later, when I came down that escalator for the very first time, and I believe it's the older than me timers will maybe disagree with this, but I'm pretty sure the convention was here at the LAX Marriott that summer, June. And I was just brand new, and I was just so scared and so excited. And I had gotten here, and you said you had hope, and I believed you. And on March 16th, 1980, I began to abstain from compulsive overeating and vomiting. I was a nonstop and still am, you know,
if I don't surrender to this on a daily basis. A nonstop binge vomiter. Some of you have heard me say on tapes and what have you, a 55,000 calorie a day binge vomiter, and you go, oh, that couldn't be. And if you ever want to know how I did that, ask me one-on-one and I'll tell you. But that really is the truth. And so I was 35 years old. I was a little bitty skinny thing, but I had been over 200 pounds at my top weight. And during the time I was I started purging at 17. And I got married when I was 19, and all glory to God, November 29th, we were married 46 years. And that's all glory to God in this fellowship. I got here, and I was very focused on what needed to be changed in him, what needed to be changed in all of you, what needed to be changed in my mother. I just had a list of people who needed to be changed, and then I'd be okay. But all the time I was smiling and telling them they were okay because there was nothing authentic about me. I was just doing the very, very, very best I could. A terrified, precious little girl in a great big grown-up body. So I was telling my friends on the way up here this morning that when I came to my first Overeaters Anonymous meeting, I felt part of a community for the very first time in my life. And having been a people pleaser and I was at school, I did what you're supposed to do, and I kissed bottoms and all the things that you do or that I did. And so I was always, I guess they say I was always fitting in. I never felt that way. But I came here and I told the truth. I said, I can't stop eating, you guys. And you said, I know. Just stick around. God loves you so much, he can't take his eyes off you. What I know today is I've learned so much from you guys, from a lot of you that don't even know that I've learned a lot from you. I've learned that I'm as good as my food is. I've learned that discipline, where my food is concerned, discipline equals happiness, and spontaneity equals chaos. And if I eat spontaneously, I feel chaotic and fat and can't get through the door and whatever. For me, spontaneous can be any number of things. I had one of my very first sponsors used to say, I will eat an extra green bean every day in order to feel a little bit shitty. Now, I don't know about myself, and I don't know if anybody can relate to that, but I've had periods of time where I can relate to that. But the truth is for me is I'm as good as my food is. And the way I know, and it's stepping out on a limb to say this, but the way I know that spontaneity equals chaos is that I have eaten spontaneously any number of times in the last almost 30 years. All glory to God, I have not done any lethal eating in the last almost 30 years. And that truly is a miracle. Left to my own devices, that's all I did. And then I threw in, 2 to 3 packs of cigarettes a day. I threw in alcohol. I threw in extramarital stuff. I mean, you name it, I threw it in because I was so terrified of being alive. And I'd meet somebody and go, oh, okay, now I'm going to be okay. If I just spend time with you, I'm going to be okay. And I still do that. I don't know if anybody can relate to that, but I still do that today. I look around the room and I go, there's my mommy. There she is. I'm just going to go crawl in her lap and then I'm going to be all right, you know? But then I remember that there's none among you, none among us who will never fail us. None among us. And that nobody is going to be able to love me unconditionally. So anyway, you said, work the steps. You said, read the book. You said, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. You said, get a food plan. You said these things, and I jumped at it because I had no hope when I got here that I was ever going to be able to stop. I knew for certain that I was going to go to my grave being the only one that knew that I vomited all my food all day long, every day. I was never going to tell another soul. And because I'm really capable of it and good at it, no one knew. No one knew. Not even my husband of 16 years at that point. And after a few months, I guess it was about 6 weeks, I went to him and I said, babe, I know that you think that I am just, it's just one other thing that I've come up with. My new most exciting thing to do. I said, but that's not what this is for me. What this is for me is life and death. Because as long as we've been together, I have been throwing up my food every single day after every time I ate, and those occasions came closer and closer and closer together until I was doing it all day long every day. I had him read an article that I had read in a magazine that talked about this new binge purge disorder called bulimorexia. That's what they called it back then. And it had been, the name had been coined by these doctors, husband and wife, Boskind White. And they said that these women, primarily women, ate copious amounts of food each day and purged it because they were trying to perfect the female role. They were trying to be the best wives, the best moms, the best friends, the best daughters, the best mothers, the best grandmothers, that I have that today now to add to it. And in order to do that in this society, they had to be thin. And I could really identify with that, and it said there was no hope for these women. That's what I thought I read, that there was no hope for these women. That was in September of 1979. In March of 1980, I came to my first meeting, March the 5th, and I began to hear things, and I just absorbed it like a sponge. And I'm a very, very bright woman for the things I'm interested in. Beyond that, you know, I mean, I can't say, some of the things you talk about, I have no idea. But when it comes to relatedness, when it comes to dealing with other human beings, when it comes to recovery in this program, I am a sponge. And so what I realized that article had actually said is the only hope for these women is that they get with a group of women like themselves and are honest. And I read that as hopeless because I was certainly never going to tell the truth about how I was feeling, ever. So I got here and I began to tell the truth. I began to look at what needed to be changed in me instead of what needed to be changed in my husband. I still go, it's coming up on 30 years, and I still go to 2 to 3 meetings every single week. I sponsor a lot of women, far more probably would claim me as a sponsor than actually call me. But that's, you know, that's kind of the way it's been over the years, and I'm always working with a half a dozen or a dozen people close up and personal. But I have people that call me once a month and once every 6 months and whatever, and I work with a sponsor myself. And I just talked to her, and she turned 60 on Tuesday, and I turned 65 last October. And can you believe it? Isn't that amazing? Aren't I just about the cutest thing you've ever seen? Huh? How can this be? And at 35, I was too old, too wrinkled, too fat, too ugly, you know, all of those things. And today, for the most part, I'm in love with Chris Parks, you know, pretty much. And what I know today is self-love is not a feeling. It's an action. If I act in self-love, the feelings will follow, okay? And in the times I don't act in self-love, I tell the truth, am accountable, and get on with the business of living and loving and working my program. And for me, not getting stuck in starting over all the time. For today, I abstain from starting over. There probably are some of you in the audience that would say that I should have started over at times, but I say to you, tell somebody else. Because I have enough critical parents in there talking to me all the time anyway, and I don't need it. But I love my life. I love my husband. I'm madly in love with him this morning. But if I base my decision to stay with him on feeling madly in love with him, we'd get divorced probably every other day. But you guys taught me things about how to relate to other people. You taught me things about how to be the best Chris I can be. You know, I am becoming, and I hope for a long time, if it's God's will, I am becoming the woman that God intended me to be all along. So I think I saw the one-minute sign. I didn't see the one-minute sign yet? Okay. Let's see. What else have I learned here? I've learned to be a pretty darn good mom, a really good mother-in-law, a fantastic grandmother. I have four little grandchildren from the ages of 5 to 10 who think I hung the moon. And you know what? But I know that they did. And I didn't see them for 12 days because I was ill. And that's the longest I've ever gone in their entire lives without seeing them. I'm blessed that they live within a mile of me, all of them. We see each other for Sunday lunch or dinner every week. They like us. They want to be around us. And isn't that a miracle? Because I positively know, left to my own devices and left doing what I was doing when I got here, I wouldn't be alive today, much less a happily married mother, wife, and grandmother. So now I've got 1 minute, but you know what I think I'm going to do? I think I'm going to wrap up because we've got a lot of great speakers up here today. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Chris. Our next speaker is Barbara.
Hi, that was a surprise. I'm Barbara, compulsive overeater. I thought you'd go in order, but you did not. And why should that be any different than the rest of my life? It's so many unexpected things. Let's see. I started in Overeaters Anonymous, I think in 1976. I was desperate. I came to my first meeting, and I did whatever they told me to do. And, you know, I didn't have any way to relate to food other than eat all the time. And I was taught something different. And I went back and forth with abstinence, but the abstinence that I have today, the date is October 2nd, 1977. So that is a miracle. And when I came into the program, I really didn't know anything about life. It was me, me, me. Now my life today is work, work, son, daughter, dog, cat, mortgage, and then me. So what it's done is it's opened my world up, and I now have a different set of problems, but I know if I ate, I would be back in the food. So let me say how that worked for me. I was told to do some reading every day, which I did, and I mean, I just listened. I went to as many meetings as I was told, but I had very loving sponsors, and they validated what I did. I was in school, and if I could only get to half a meeting, my sponsor always said the half that I went to was the best half. If it was the speaker, that was the best part. If it was the pitches, and the fact that I just got there and showing up, and the whole Woody Allen thing about 70% of life is just showing up, really made so much sense to me after coming to the program. You know, they say, bring the body and the rest will follow. Well, that's what happened, you know. So here I am in school and, you know, learning a different way of life. I had never had three meals. I would just eat all day. And, you know, it started working for me. I became very rigid with my food. And over the years, I've become way more flexible and looser. And that's actually positive for me because that helps me be less rigid in my life, which is really important if you want to have any kind of relationship with any other person because they have their own, you know, likes, dislikes. So my experience is that I'm in school and I was able to get my complete my bachelor's in San Francisco, and then I moved to Los Angeles to be in a master's program. And one of the things that happened is that I drove my little car down here, and then my sponsor at that time, who I went through my first fourth step with, said, "How do you know you're going to make it?" And I said, "I guess I have faith." And that was the first time I really realized that I was not alone, and I had a higher power, and that higher power could help me. And, you know, it being a student for me was a difficult way of life. I'm not that much of a reader or not studious, but I was very motivated, and that was just all I could do. And basically, when I would hear to do one thing at a time, it kind of worked for me, and I was able to get through that. And you know, I would make phone calls, I would do whatever it took. And I remember initially the bargain that I made was that I was willing to go to any length. And there's a little pamphlet that I love. It's Before You Take the First Compulsive Bite, which I carried one with me. I had one in my bedroom. I mean, it was torn, but I read that all the time. And sometimes, although I'm willing, my willing to go to any lengths may not seem that. It's not like going cross country. It might be walking on the other side of the street or doing one little different thing. But for me, that's willing to go to any lengths, and then that was okay. I had a variety of sponsors. I mean, I had several sponsors in the program. This other woman that I referred to is very spiritual, which helped me a lot, got me really into and hooked on the steps, and that's sort of my big book kind of thing. I mean, that's what I always go back to. Certain steps to help me with whatever I'm going through. It kind of works for me, and it's the AA literature. Through that process, what I learned is that I have a choice, and I never knew that I had that power, that I can actually choose to do something different, and I can wait something out. I was pretty much of an isolator, although I didn't call me that. I mean, that's just what I did. And I didn't really reach out to people. And that's still kind of a style of mine. I'm a private person, and it takes a lot for me. I'm working on that. I'm kind of working on that, being a little more open. I also came into the program very negative. There's one of the steps that talks about some of that negativity oozing out of every pore, and that was me. And, you know, today I see the glass half full, not half empty. And that's just so amazing, you know, that there was one speaker, one meeting I used to go to long time ago, and he used to say that the kind of person that you were could not do the things that you're doing today. So it actually is that personality change. Oh, 5 minutes, okay. Let's see. So here I am in school, getting a job. I met somebody, got married, got pregnant. And, you know, I always would say along each step of the way, I've shared this before, is that I can abstain if it's just me. But if I get married, I won't be able to abstain. Okay, I got married. So I changed my food from the vegetarian tofu kind of tuna fish salad type, you know, to other meats and all that other stuff. But I'm still abstaining. Then I said, if I have children, I won't be able to abstain. I have two children. They're not children anymore. I have a son, 25, and a daughter, 17. And I have all kinds of junk in the house that they want, you know, ice cream and stuff. Although I will say that their eating habits are 100% better than I was when I was growing up, because they have me as a model. Okay, thank you. Hi. Yeah. So this one of the jobs that I have today, I will have been at this job 15 years. They know I don't eat desserts. I've never eaten desserts 15 years. You know, so that's just something back to I have a choice. And just because that's what other people are doing, it doesn't mean that I have to do it. It was, the beginning years were very difficult, and I would say a part of this, I used to, get the three meals a day, I used to chew gum in between. And I had such a large credit card bill just because of gum. You know, that whatever it takes, you know, the first year, well, it's less than a year, but the first year. Okay. 8 years ago, I was in an automobile accident. My husband didn't survive. My son was critically injured. We were all in the car. And, you know, I still had the program, although, believe me, that wasn't the first thing on my mind. And the reason that I mention it, my son was, who's, you know, I had a lot of challenges and then a lot of challenges with the kids. And I found that I closed down a lot, became very task-oriented. But what I'm saying is that eating wouldn't have made it better, wouldn't have brought my husband back, wouldn't have changed what happened to my son or the whole thing. So, and people sent me literature in, you know, and that's life. I mean, that's life. And it still hurts today. I'm a single parent. I really don't like it. And if I had known, I wouldn't have been a parent. It's a difficult job for me. And it was difficult with my son, although he's doing great. He's out of state. But still, it's a lot of responsibility on me. And then my daughter, who's a senior in high school, is so moody, you know, and very private. I don't know where she gets that from. You know, she doesn't share anything with me, but she says, Mom, you don't tell me anything. So, okay, all right, that's true. But we're working on that, but she has a boyfriend, and she has her own little life. And then, actually, I was dating, and then, long story short, I was engaged, and gorgeous ring, and the guy broke off the engagement. And so here I am alone again, and that's the way I feel. This last week, I've been kind of in a little bit of my own private self-pity thing, feeling alone and, you know, nobody to share with. And I guess just being here, you know, I can reach out to you guys and sort of reach out to my higher power and just, you know, have life unfold, you know. And back to what the topic is, as long as I take the action. And I think the other part of it, which I have a hard time, is that of letting go of the results. But anyway, I just keep coming back, and thank you. All right.
Hi, I'm David, compulsive overeater.
Hi.
And thank you, Karen, for giving us a list, because it was so scary. Like, are you next? It's just, after all these years, still get nervous. I'll give you real quick. It's hard for me to just talk on a topic, and I'm so used to when I'm sharing my what happened, what it used to be like, what happened, what it's like now. And some of you have maybe heard me before, but I think just for a couple minutes, so just so I get centered and I remember where I'm coming from. but I have been a compulsive overeater all my life. I never had a normal childhood or whatever. I never had a normal relationship with food. I never had a normal body. I only remember being fat and miserable and thinking I was born that way, which I, in a way, maybe I was. I was born with this disease, but I didn't have to be fat forever. But I grow, you know, when I was a kid, I thought I was. And I had, it's more than the weight, because I see I have children and they both have some weight issues, but they don't have the head that I had. They don't hate themselves like it. To me, it was all combined. It was the food to fill that inside boredom, which I see in my kids and other kids to this day. But it was food to fill it. It was being fat, hating myself, being miserable, not liking the world, trudging life, and wanting to die, but being so afraid of death, but just not wanting to live either. And that's a really horrible place to be, but that's what it was like. I'd go to school, and the only thing, and I thought I was stupid because I didn't get good grades, and I didn't know what was going on, but I thought that it should just come. It would, you know, so all when I was in school, all I would be thinking about was what I'm going to eat at lunch, what I'm going to eat at snack, what food can I get when I get home, and then after, you know, and not I'm thinking I love food, but never enjoying it because I was only thinking about what else I could eat, and you know, dinner, all I was thinking about what's going to be left over and how much can I sneak in my room without my parents seeing, you know, and then. When I got to, it wasn't until I was 10 or 11 realizing that I had to, if I ever, you know, I would need to eat less. So then it was guilt. So then I gained weight more quickly. The more guilty I felt, the more I ate. And never thinking I should have it. I always thought I should be starving. So anything I put in my body, I felt bad about. And I needed the food because the head, it was the head. You know, I thought it was the weight that was making me miserable, but it was the voices all the time saying, you shouldn't eat anything, you fat pig. You'll never be anything. You'll be a street person. You know, you'll be living at home until your parents die, and then you'll wind up being a street person. And that's how I talked to myself, not believing in God. I was raised Jewish, and I went to synagogue, but it didn't mean God to me. It just was things I was forced upon me. My parents, my dad was a Holocaust survivor and my mother was a depression baby. They were both born in June 1930. And there's something about that period that made them crazy. And what happened, anyway, they pushed me because they didn't have experience. My father lost, you know, was in Auschwitz and his family was killed there and he was only 13, 14 years old. So he didn't know what it was like to be a teenager with, you know, he didn't know what a family was like. And my mother, but they pushed me to join Boy Scouts and Woodcraft Rangers and this, and go to synagogue and become bar mitzvah and do this and everything. They pushed me because what they didn't have growing up. And only way I could handle that was the food. It was like it was yesterday and it was a long, long time ago. Going to like a Boy Scouts meeting and saying, I'm so afraid of everybody. I can't face people. I was so afraid of people and I didn't think I could handle it, but I would psych myself up and say, okay, there's going to be food. Let's see. There'll be brownies. There'll be this. There'll be cookies. That would be like a mantra. Like we say the serenity nowadays, you know, we say the serenity prayer. I would just start thinking of all the food that would be there. And that was the only way that I could show up to something. And anyway, it was a miserable existence and a lot of watching TV, zoning out with the food, with TV. And then I wondered why I didn't do well in school. I never cracked a book. Never did. When I see my kids do homework, it's still foreign. I don't get it. How they just do it. I didn't. And my parents were very dysfunctional, with their background and they were fighting all the time and they never forced us to do homework. Half my life, I never went to a dentist. We just didn't take care of things. We just let our house fall apart. We just fought all the time. I have a younger brother, and it was just four people yelling and screaming and hating each other. You know, and my parents weren't alcoholics. My mother was definitely a compulsive overeater and killed herself with this. Food killed her eventually. And my father was a bit of a compulsive overeater, a smoker, and a workaholic, and just very dysfunctional. And food just was the thing that kept me so I could survive. And I don't know if I would have survived without food, without having that. But I just needed it to turn it all off. And we never traveled because my father had a business and he was a workaholic and they were dysfunctional. The longest family vacation we ever had as the four of us, our longest was we left Friday to go to Zion National Park. We spent 2 days there, 1 day back, driving back to Las Vegas. So 3 nights and 4 days was the longest family trip I ever had. And the next one was a weekend away in Santa Cruz. And we lived in L.A. That was the only two family vacations I ever had growing up. I'm saying all this not to blame or whatever, but just to tell you how different my life is today. And I went from being a chubby kid to being an obese kid and constantly gaining weight. The only time I went on a vacation, my dad went back to Israel where he had gone after the war, and he had a nephew getting married, and I went. It was just me and him, and we went back there when I was 10, and I lost weight being there, being out of my environment, walking. We also went to Europe, and I'd never, like I said, the travel was what I just explained. This was the only trip in my life, and it was just me and my dad, and I lost weight. And so I tried all kinds of diets, and then I gained weight even more rapidly. Anyway, in 1973, when I was 12 years old, my mother found out a way. She was given like 6 months to live, and she was only in her early, she would have been 43 at the time. And she was told that she was going to die of obesity because she had heart problems and high blood pressure problems, and everything was, she was out of control. And I went to a few meetings, and it's like I couldn't fathom that I could work the steps, be honest, or the whole thing. So I had to do more eating and more misery, when I came to OA, June 1976. And I was just about to start high school, and I'm still here. You know, I'm still here. I don't know how, you know, I don't know, but there is a higher power, or else I wouldn't be here. I want to tell you what I think I'm very fortunate, I'm grateful for. I have a perspective of OA with a lot of different lives. I know what it's like to be a teenager in OA and living at home and learning to abstain and work a program. And in those days, it took a while, and I won't go into the details, but it took me, you know, about 3, 4, 5 months till I was willing to ask for help and start calling in my food. It never was perfect. It's still not perfect. It's not a rigid food plan, and I eat anything and everything on my absence. But I date my absence from October 1976 because that's when I started calling in what I was going to eat. But I have that perspective of that. And in those days, you know, then I started going more and more meetings. And I know what it's like. I used to go to 5, 6 meetings a week, meditate, lots of writing. I had a sponsor I called and did my 4th step eventually, 5th step, but all the things. And that was a good experience. I have the experience of being single. When I was 18, I moved out of my parents' house, and I thought I couldn't abstain if nobody was watching me. And I learned to abstain, you know, and learn to cook for myself and take care of my life. I know what it's like to live with people. I eventually got roommates, and a few years later, me and the lady who's now my wife, we moved in together, and I know what it's like to be, you know, live as a couple and live with people and abstain and work a program. And it was different. It's different when there's other people in your life. And for the last 12 and whatever years, I know what it's like to have kids and try and work a program and abstain and go to meetings. And it's not easy. And starting to get to the point, my kids, you know, when they go away to camp or a weekend away, I'm starting to feel like what it's like to be alone again and not have kids as the middle of your universe. But I think I don't know, you know, I don't think I do it good enough. After all these years, I should be perfect, and I don't do enough program. And so I have to write down, and I judge people who have to write down things when they're speaking, so I judge myself. But I have to write down because I think I don't work the program good enough. But what I, there's some bottom line, especially when in the mornings, you know, I was used to having nobody in my life and just taking care of myself. After work, just going to whatever meeting or doing whatever I want. And now it's a compromise. Now I can't go to as many meetings. I can't, you know, things are different. So I read two books. I read the Just for Today and the Voices of Recovery every day. I prefer in the morning. But sometimes it has to be in the evening after everybody goes to bed and on my balcony. Sometimes it has to be in my car before I go into work. Sometimes it has to be take the books, go to a park at lunch and read my books and meditate. I have to do what I have to do, and I have a sponsor that said, okay, if you don't do it in the morning, you have got to do it. And so it's every day that's what I have to do. I've traveled all over the world and know that yeah, I can take my meditation books with me. Thank God for cell phones nowadays. I can call once a week. I call my sponsor every week. And whether I'm out of the country, whether I'm on vacation, whatever it is, I make at least once a week that call. So I stay centered and I'm checking in. I really need two meetings a week. Often it's only one meeting because of my schedule, but I have to still go to meetings. What's not part of our tools, but part of my program, I exercise at least six times a week. Moderately, you know, maybe it's only 20 minutes, but I exercise. I go to the gym often three times a week to take care of myself. I brush my teeth. You know, like I said, I went half my life without going to dentist. I have to brush my teeth and floss, you know, every day. I take vitamins. My parents for years had, you know, to do healthy things like that, but that's part of my program is to love my body back, to love myself back. I've been able to travel all over and take this program, go to meetings in I don't know how many countries and states and go to conventions. You know, after 30-something years, I'm loving seeing all these people and reconnecting and feeling the energy. And I'm just so grateful. My life is truly blessed today, and it's all because of you people, and I've learned to love myself. This person who hated life and hated themselves, hated everybody else, hated life, I love life. I wish I could live forever sometimes. And then other times I feel different. But the reality. But I really, there's so much excitement. I'm looking at some changes at work, and I'm so excited. I was saying I wish I could work for another 40 years, you know. And without this program, how do I even have a job? How do I have a house? How do I have a life? So thank you all so much for listening to me. This is part of my service. And what keeps me in recovery and keeps me coming back, sharing my story, sharing where I come from so I never take it for granted, the beautiful life that I have today. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Jerry, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And by the grace of God, I've been abstinent for over 34 years. And that's only by the grace of God. I'm holding my 34-year token here because I'm scared. And no matter how long I've been in the program, I'm still scared. When I came in, the action I took because I was scared is I did what they told me to do. And they told me to get a big book, and they told me to weigh and measure my food. And it worked. I saw people that were thin for the first time in my life. So that's what I did. And they told me to call in my food too, which I really didn't understand, but I did it. And to me, that was action. Coming to my first meeting was action. And we're supposed to be talking about growing the boat. So I'm looking at the action that I did when I came in and that I'm still doing today. And I still weigh and measure my food. For a while, I had to hide. I had to be a closet person that weighed and measured their food in the program. But now I can say it, and because that's what's worked for me. I have three weighed and measured meals a day, except when I'm out. I did that when I came in, and I still do that. When they told me to read the big book, I bought one, and I didn't understand what the big book had to do with me, because they kept talking about the big book as if it was some big, wonderful, wonderful, the magic was going to be in the big book. And when I first read it, or read the first thing about Bill, I thought, oh, I really didn't think it was magic. But I kept reading it. And gradually, the more I read the big book, the more my story is like Bill. I wasn't a high, you know, he did finances and all that kind of stuff. And he found his, what did he call it? He had found something in life because he had made it to Wall Street. Well, I was married and I had made it, you know. That was my claim to fame, is that I was married and wow, look at me. This is it. This is the life. And then I stayed married and I found that that was not the life. It wasn't. I've been single for what? I don't know, 20 years, and I really like my life today. But with the abstinence, you know, to me, this is where action begins. This is how I row the boat. I row the boat with my abstinence. I have to have a committed food plan. I have to do my food the way I've always done it. Whenever I make a change with my food, I think about it usually for about a year. And I write about it, and to me, it's a matter of life and death. My abstinence and my food is a matter of life and death, and, you know, food is very subtle, cunning, and baffling. And I don't want to take that first bite. So when I think of, when I think of rowing the boat, I think of abstinence. That's the first and foremost thing that gets me to where I'm supposed to be. It's how my program began. It's how my life began. I began life with food. I began life as a compulsive overeater. And I still am a compulsive overeater. And my life is always going to revolve around food. So for me, abstinence is the beginning. It's the beginning of the kind of life that I get to have 34 years after program. Another thing that they said to do is to do service. And service for me began with finding a sponsor. Well, it wasn't my service. It was their service. And it began with, and it is taking on a sponsee. Boy, you get nervous up here. I didn't realize I was going to be this nervous. All these people. So service. And I began with sponsoring, and I couldn't understand, I didn't sponsor, I don't know, I had been abstinent for a while, and then my sponsor told me I had to sponsor, and I couldn't understand how I could do it, because here I was just young and dumb, you know, I really just didn't know how, but someone started to call me, and she had an education, she was a teacher, and I thought she was really smart, and I couldn't understand why she was calling me, but she did, and So that's how my service began. It began with sponsoring. And since then, the service has involved chair of San Diego Intergroup for 4 years and doing retreats and doing all these kinds of things that I've been asked to do. I'm here today because my sponsor said so. And, you know, when my sponsor tells me to do something, most of the time I do what she says, most of the time. And so I do what I'm told, and I did it when I first came in, and I still do what I'm told most of the time now. Let's see, what else? I thought I was fine. Okay. And I'm thinking of the promises. The promises talk about we will know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past or wish to shut the door on it, and we will lose fear of financial insecurity and of people. And when I came in, that's what I was afraid of. I was always broke. I was always broke. And I didn't know why. I wasn't working. And and by coming into this program, what happened with that is that I thought, oh, maybe I need to get an education. I went to school. My kids were in school, so I became a teacher's aide. And I started to make a little bit of money. Then I thought, oh, and I was in the program. Then I thought, well, maybe I have to do something to make more money. So I went back to school and I got, I became a teacher myself. And then after that, I got a master's degree. And all these things came from being in the program. And this is someone who I was like the nothing that was into the something that is by taking action. I didn't like going to school. I didn't like doing a lot of the things that I've had to do in order to not live in the fear of financial insecurity. But there's been things that I've had to do. Fear of people. I was very much a shrinking violet when I came in. I was afraid of people and of everything. I was really afraid of everything. And I would just as soon just isolate. But this program told me I couldn't. I had to do what they asked me to do. I had to get up and lead meetings, and I was really scared. It took me a long time to lead. I mean, it took me a long time to even get up and pitch. But because I didn't want to go back out there and eat, I did that. I'm here today because I still don't want to go back out there and eat. There's been this thing, being that I'm single, and I just love being single. I love to dance. But, you know, there's always this little thing in the back of my mind maybe someday. Well, someday has happened, and I'm kind of seeing someone, kind of, one day at a time. And I don't want to get hurt, so I keep saying just one day at a time. So now that I'm in this kind of a one day at a time thing, I think of... I started to indulge in jealousy, and I haven't been in a relationship in a while, or I haven't been in a one day at a time thing for a while, and I forgot what it's like. I forgot the insanity of jealousy, and I was scared. I'm scared of it. You know, I am so afraid of the jealousy that I feel, and it's been a difficult opportunity for me to grow. And so when I think of, a couple of months ago, I was really into the jealousy thing. Oh, God, I don't like this. I don't want to be in a relationship. Forget it. I just don't want it. I'm just fine by myself. I was fine when I wasn't involved, and I'm just fine. I don't want to deal with this. And I was so scared, and I wanted to eat. And I haven't felt that way in a long time, but I'm not cured. I wanted to eat. Oh, my God, this is really serious. And it was the middle of the night, so I couldn't call anyone. I couldn't sleep, and the insanity, the stinking thinking was going on in my head, and it was going on. And then I started to compare myself to other women. And so what I did in the middle of the night is I got up and tried on my hot dresses. You know, my short, tight, red dresses. And it was freezing. I was cold because I hadn't started turning the heater on yet. And I was trying on these clothes and freezing. And then I looked in the mirror and I thought, wow, you look hot. You know, you look hot. And the next morning, I started to write about that. And as I wrote, I thought, why would anyone want to be with me? Why? I couldn't understand. There's so many other people that have more than I do, they look better than I do, they're taller than I am, and, you know, all these things. And I was just, and I thought, why would anyone want to be with someone who only weighs 99 pounds? You look like a skinny rat. And I was thinking of all these things about myself, and I just could not understand it. And then, because I still write all the time, I started to write, why would I want to be with me? You know, not why would anyone else want to be with me, but why would I want to be with me? And I continued to write, and I thought, oh, the only reason I would want to be with me is because I have a relationship with God. That's the only reason I would want to be with me. And you know what? Having a relationship with God is good enough. You know, having a relationship with God is damn good, you know, because to me, having a relationship with God is a matter of life and death. And my abstinence is a matter of life and death. And doing service is a matter of life and death for me. So when I look at the action that I take, The actions that I take, they've all been a matter of life and death for me, because the second part of the promises, it talks about food is a subtle foe, and I can't rest on my laurels. You know, I can't just take it easy and say, oh, I've been abstinent for 34 years. I can just take it easy. The longer I abstain, the more important my abstinence becomes to me, and the more important this program becomes to me, and the more it is a matter of life and death. My life is wonderful and beautiful and all that. What I mean, it's the promises have come true. And that means that it's not perfect all the time. That means that when there's fear, I have to walk through it, and I have to use the tools for the fears that I have. Like I said, when I first came in, I didn't have a job. I didn't have an education, and yada, yada, yada. Well, I've been teaching for 22 years. And I wish I could say that I'm looking forward to teaching another 22 years, but I'm not. I can hardly wait to retire. And I've got two more years. I was 29 when I came in this program, and I'm 63 now. And to me, I'm living one day at a time. I'm living one day at a time in my job. I'm living one day at a time with my food. And thank you.
Hi, I'm April. I'm a compulsive overeater. Can you hear me?
Hi, April.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Is that better? Let's do that again. Hi, I'm April. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for being here today. It means a lot to me that you're here. Can I just see the hands of the people who consider themselves new to OA? They've never been in OA in the last, say, month or two, or 3 months, say. Just so, thank you. So I just want you to know that I'll qualify. So I came into Overeaters Anonymous December of 1975. I was 21 years old. I was in college. And it took me 6 years to get what I claim as abstinence. That was 6 years of I saw myself as kind of a floppy fish out of water, doing the very best I could, not understanding most of it. I would work with a sponsor on the phone, talk to people, and really when they talked about the steps, it was in one ear and out the other. I had no idea what they were talking about. I don't think I did much reading, or if I did, I don't remember it. And I just wanted to lose weight and then go. I was not here for a long time like you guys. I just wanted to lose the weight and leave. And what I found was that it's that three-legged stool, as we all know now, which is it can't just be about the physical food. It's not just about the physical, because the physical, as some of you have talked about, has actually saved me. In my growing up, in my family, all of the things that I didn't want to deal with and ate because of, I think the food saved me. I think I didn't have an ulcer because I overate. I think I was able to be likable because I overate. I don't blame the food or my reaching for it. So the physical is one thing. If I take away the food but don't change as a person so that I don't deal with the emotional and I don't have something that takes care of me on a spiritual level, then I'm really lost. That's when I will have a nervous breakdown. That's when I will find another compulsion to use because I have this unfillable hole. So I want to talk a little bit about footwork. I want to talk a little bit about everything. And I want you to know that maybe all of us, but I can certainly speak for myself, is every time someone got up to speak today, like, I thought, they're the best. I could never talk like them. What are they saying? I better take notes. Oh, my God. Mine's not going to be good enough. Oh, I'm making no sense. Look at my notes. They make no sense. No. Okay, then just listen, April. Just listen. Just listen. Go with thought. Then I looked at my text because someone had texted me saying, just carry the message. And I just thought, okay, so that's that other, that's the spiritual level, which is I'm going to tell you what comes into my mind based on my notes. And hopefully it'll help someone.